Welcome to the Casual Author Podcast. I'm Dan, sci-fi and fantasy author, father of six, full-time worker, homesteader, as well as a man of many other responsibilities. I'm here to bring you inspiration and positivity around having a busy life and wanting to chase that author career, even if you have to take a casual approach. For more information about me, my books, and the podcast, head to dankenner.com/podcast. And here's the show. Hey there, it's Dan Kenner with episode number 119 of The Casual Author. Today is Monday, May 13th, 2024, as I record this. And today we're talking to Jim Perry about seizing the opportunities in your life. Jim talks about how he never thought that he would write a book, but after being in the military and after the unfortunate passing of his wife, he got into writing and has since fallen in love with it. He talks a little bit about his journey, where his story comes from, his inspiration, and how it helps him in his life currently. So a lot of really great conversations. He's a very positive person, just full of wisdom. He's a font of wisdom. I think you're really going to enjoy that conversation. So in terms of updates this week, I can tell you what, it has been a whirlwind of a week in a number of ways. So I don't even know where to start in terms of homesteading. We put, as I mentioned a couple podcasts ago, we put a lot of, I think it was 21 eggs in our incubator so that we could try to hatch them. And we had a few hatch. It was only about five or six, and it was a lot lower than we expected. So the crazy thing is when we checked all of the eggs, most of them had a chick inside of them. You could see when you shine a light on them, it shows what's inside. So we're unsure why a lot of them didn't hatch. The conditions of the incubator claimed to be correct, but maybe we're wondering if our incubator is just dysfunctional, or you know, maybe the humidity was off. We're not sure. So we're going to try a different method. We're going to try to hatch out some more. But until then, we're going to buy some chicks just so that we have some to grow out with the few that we have that actually did hatch. And then unfortunately, we did have a predator attack in our chickens last week, which we've never really dealt with before. We protect our chickens pretty well. We've been doing chickens for 7 years now, I believe, and not once have we had a predator attack. Now, you can do everything you can, but they happen. You know, you've got dogs, raccoons, badgers, weasels. I mean, there's all sorts of things that can attack your chickens, and so we felt very grateful that we have not had any problems. This last week, we had hawks attack, unfortunately, which are, you know, they're the most challenging thing to protect from, because unless you keep them in an enclosed with a roof space, the hawks can just swoop in whenever they want, and they're protected animals, so you can't really kill them. So yeah, it's tricky. Fortunately, they did get four of our chickens, a rooster, and three of the hens. I were assuming the rooster went out to defend the hens while they were out there. So we kept them sheltered for a couple days, hoping that maybe the hawks would move on. They're not, clearly. So we're just trying to keep our chickens alive while they're on the field. More than likely, we will have to move them out of the field and back into their coop, because, you know, I doubt hawks will get them there. It's a much smaller space from an open. Most of it's covered is what I mean. Some of it's open, but not a lot of it is open. So if we have any more get attacked, then we will have to move them back, which is unfortunate, because chickens being out in the field and free ranging is really good for their bodies. Their eggs are just so much healthier. You can see the color. The color of the yolk went from a bright yellow to a dark orange, which tells you that's what happens with free range eggs. They go out and they eat, and it converts it into, you know, all those nutrients into their eggs. So hopefully we can find a solution for that. We don't want to lose any more chickens. And of course, it was pretty gnarly seeing it, so that's not fun. And, you know, we've invested a lot in these chickens, so we don't want to lose any more. So that, other than that, we planted a bunch of potatoes, then looked at it and realized we don't have enough. We need more potatoes based on how much our family ate last year. We just ate our last batch of potatoes from last year. And, you know, we still have a lot more months before we get new ones. So we're going to try to plant double the potatoes this year, even with the baby coming. Should be interesting, but we eat a lot of potatoes and they grow well here, so why not? We did sell two families of goats. Well, technically three, two families of goats. Someone bought the mom and two doelings couple weeks ago, which it's a little bit strange to see them go, but it makes sense given our circumstances. We are just scaling down on the goats. We're going to keep a couple of them, but we are searching for a cow in earnest. Honestly, whenever we find a cow, we will be buying it. So we just have our sights on cows right now. And hopefully we find one soon. Unfortunately, the cow's milk does not taste as good as the goat's milk. Goat's milk is much more rich and creamy than the cow's milk, but it's just impractical to spend 45 minutes to an hour twice a day when eventually we'll do it twice a day milking five goats when you could get one cow. And as long as the orifices and the teats and everything look fine, you can probably milk that one cow out in like 20 minutes and you get the same, if not more, milk from that one animal. So it's just more practical. You know, we can't sustain the time it takes to milk all those goats. Not with me having a full-time job and having all the kids. It just doesn't make sense. Eventually the kids will be able to help, but still, until then, we need to simplify, and that's what the cow is for. So yeah, we're on the lookout for a cow. It could be any day now. It really just depends on when we find one that fits our family and our needs. We just need one that's friendly and halter trained. We can't be chasing a cow. We've chased goats for too many years now. And while it's good exercise, I don't really feel like chasing goats around. So that's what's happening. We're keeping the two goats that are very friendly and actually come to us and don't run away. And then all the other ones were finding new families, which it's nice. It's a little bit of a breath of fresh air to not have so many, but at the same time, kind of sad. So no, I feel like there's probably more I could talk about from a homesteading perspective, but we'll take a pause and maybe we'll talk about more of them later because I feel like there's so much going on from the homestead life. In terms of writing, I did start a short story last week. It's called To Commune with Spirits. It's a very interesting story that just came out of nowhere. As with my discovery writing brain, I just thought of this basic concept, dove into it, and I'm having a blast. I'm about 10,000 words, which gives me, I think 17,000 is my limit. So can't go over that for the Writers of the Future competition. I'm hoping to have that finished by the end of this week. We'll see if it actually happens. Then I'll set it aside, go back to the Hidden Heritage series that I'm working on, continue editing and or writing the third book. I think I still want to keep writing that third book until it's done. As far as the covers go, I've pretty much settled on covers one and two and the way they look. I will be revealing those on Instagram and via emails. If you want to see what those look like, I'll send out the images. I'm pretty proud of myself for making those, considering I have very little design experience, done a lot of research, played around with these over and over and over again, but I finally settled on a design that I feel happy with and comfortable with. And the bright side is, if I don't like it, I can always change it later. But I think it's a great place to start. A lot of people have looked at them and said, this totally screams YA. It looks exactly like the genre that you're going for, and it catches the eye in thumbnail version. So that's the tricky thing about covers. You have to think about it from a thumbnail perspective. Since most people are scrolling ebooks in, you know, they're looking at the thumbnails and not the full version. So we'll see how it lands. And looking forward to getting that out to you. In terms of the chapters being released, there will be two new chapters released. For one for Dragonblooded and one for the Etcher's Plight. If you join my Ream subscription, you'll be able to see that. Those will be going out this week. So keep an eye on that. It's always fun to release new things. I may have to ramp up the release of the Dragonblood chapters here soon, particularly when I dive into the edits. I don't set publish dates until I'm done with completed files because, you know, anything could happen, particularly with the baby being born soon. Maybe August, maybe September, October, I'm not sure exactly. But yeah, getting into the edits will be interesting. And then really it's the only thing stopping me after I go through those line edits is a proofread. So if you are interested in being an ARC reader, definitely let me know. Just email me at Dan at excuse me, Dan at that's not what I'm looking for. Yeah, Dan at dankenner.com. Goodness, that moment when you forget your email address. Or Dan at thecasualauthor.com works as well. That will also come to me. Just let me know. You want to be an ARC reader? I may create a more formal sign up. I haven't been great about that in the past, but maybe I'll be more official of that if you want to be part of the quote unquote street team. If you sign up for the Ream subscription, you're going to get it anyway. I'll just update all of the chapters to the new versions of the chapters after I do the proofread and line edits and everything. So I already put the line edited version up, but I haven't reviewed those edits. So it's a little bit of a, you know, crapshoot in terms of what you're going to get. My line editor was amazing. It really just comes down to me approving them, which, you know, if you've ever edited something, takes a long time. So I believe that's everything in terms of updates from the author perspective. So we can go ahead and shift over to the interview portion of the podcast with Jim. Hey Jim, how are you doing today?
Just fine. How are you doing, Dan?
Doing very, very well. I'm thrilled to pick your brain a little bit on your story around writing, as well as all of your experiences from being in the military and whatnot. But before we dive into that fun stuff, how long have you been writing and publishing?
About 1 year,
Okay.
maybe two if you count the first book, really. About 2 years.
Nice. So did you always want to write, or is this like a new revelation to you as of recently?
No, I always wanted to. My dad, when I was younger, he did some writing, published a couple of magazine stories is all. And it's a kind of a bucket list thing for me. I've always felt that if you want to do something, you should at least attempt it. And I lost my wife about a year ago. And doing this book was actually therapeutic for me. It gave me something to do on those quiet evenings. I'm not a TV kind of guy. I don't watch much TV. So it served a couple purposes to fill that desire to actually write something, to feel like I accomplished something, and to take a story that I had heard years ago and just kind of tweak it and turn it into a book. So yeah, it's just another check mark off, but I enjoy it. And like I say, it's therapeutic. I've gotten a habit. I've started a third book, actually a sequel to this one, to build on it, to make it a little more in depth, to build the characters, that type of thing. There's still a story to tell, I think.
Yeah, it's
So.
very, I mean, I'm sorry to hear about your wife. That is very challenging, I can imagine. So is that ultimately what led to, because you've wanted to write a book for some time for, public. I know you mentioned you wrote a book kind of just for your family prior to starting recording. Is that what ultimately led to publishing something publicly?
Yes,
Is your wife passing away?
in the story, I wanted to share the story. I don't know if you've read this or not. Back in 1943, the Defense Department supposedly tried to make a ship invisible. There's stories and internet accounts called the Philadelphia Experiment. Some people say it's true, some say it's not, but anyway. I heard about that decades ago, and the book is essentially about that, but in a smaller scale, fiction, obviously. So that's what I used to do that. So this story, again, it's if you like in the first book. The purpose of the first book was not only family history, but I hope it inspired my children because I believe young people should read page-turning type book. I think it's good for them. But it also, I hope to instill in them that again, if you want to do something, then do it. You seize opportunities or you look for opportunities and don't let people tell you that you can't do it. You'll never be able to do that. I've been fortunate enough in my whole life. We weren't a wealthy family. We were just regular people. I still am. But I've been fortunate enough to seize those opportunities. The Army helped me do that. And I just get wacky ideas. And thank God I had a wife that kind of supported it, as long as it was within the law. So you, I think you, your character, your self-esteem, everything grows as a result of that. So that's when I wrote the book, it's a big deal for me. I mean, not everybody does it, and I believe it's partly because they think, well, I'll never be able to do it, so they don't try. Well, I did. I have a habit of spending money anyway, so I figured why not just publish a book? So that's what I did.
I mean, I
And
love
I
that.
think
Please.
it's a good story. There's some truth to it, if you believe in the Philadelphia experiment. I've had people tell me who have read it that got them thinking, about it, wondering if indeed it did happen. So that's okay. If you start thinking about it, okay, go check it out and see. So,
I mean, it's all of the things that you said, I definitely agree with in terms of, you know, setting a great example for your family, your grandchildren and children, and to seize opportunities. But also just the love of reading. I think humankind, there's just a very important place for reading and imagination and thought.
Yes, there
and
is.
questioning, and reading books and writing books is one of the greatest ways to do that. And how
Yep.
cool that you've provided that opportunity for not only your family, but also other readers to think about, you know, the subject matter of your book and really consider, well, what if this happened? You know, what could that potentially mean? You know, what could be the ramifications of it? And hey, could be sequels. I know you'd already mentioned sequels to the book, but there's some content for you to go with. So where you served in the Army, is that correct? Is
Yes,
that
sir.
saying?
It sure did.
So
21
how,
years.
wow. That's amazing. My brother served in the National Guard for a number of years as well.
Well,
And
good
he
for
has a
him.
lot of great experiences, and it actually kind of led to him writing books as well. He's also writing books from like a military perspective, kind of talking about his experience. So how much of your experience having been in the Army did you leverage to put content into this book? Did you pull on it a lot?
Well, the main character in the book is a young Army soldier. Just like I was. In retrospect, the book is somewhat of a metaphor for my life, with the characters based on people I went to school with and knew well, with the exception of one character, they're all fictitious names. The perseverance, the dedication. It's difficult sometimes for regular people like me who have chores to do, business to tend to take time to actually do this. But I was a recruiter for some years, and we had what was called red time. In other words, we had to mark on our daily calendar a period of a couple hours that was uninterrupted to make phone calls and talk to prospective candidates. So I implemented the same policy here at my desk. Every night at a certain time, I had my own read time as a minimum 1 hour to move the book forward, sometimes more. So besides the character in the book and the references to his time in the Army that he has, my experience had actually helped me put that together and stay with it when I got discouraged. As a new writer, especially, I would edit the chapters and want to throw it in the trash can and get discouraged. But I just kept on plugging because I didn't know any better. So I just kept doing it. So.
Well, maybe that was a good thing that you didn't know any better, because now here you are. It's all done and published and out there.
And looking forward to doing the next one. The next one I hope to, as I learned a lot during this whole process about publishing business, about the book writing itself, about characters and plots and all this other stuff. And I feel now that I can take what I learned in this and apply it to the new one based on feedback and reviews that I have so far. So not everybody will like the book. I can tell you that right now. For obviously, people don't like everything. So that doesn't hurt my feelings. I just put my big boy pants on and keep plugging. But anytime, I mean, I've played music. I've been into art, automotive art, airbrushing, custom painting on cars. And not everybody likes what I did. And that's understandable. We all have our likes and dislikes. And I think the book is no different as an art form. A lot of me is in it. But it's written in such a way that the people in the book, the characters, are regular people. They don't wear capes. They're not Supermen, except for one character that I introduced later on. actually has more strength and fortitude than the than the regular guys, even the soldier, even the main character. So it's written in a, such a way that everybody can read it, because most of what I do, I always have my grandchildren and children in mind, and I want them to be able to read it without worrying about any vulgarities or cursing or you know, thinking about things like that. The preacher's wife can read it. My mother can read it. Children can read it and understand it. And that's what I want, anybody to pick it up and read it without. I mean, we're talking my grandkids. The oldest one that stays with me sometimes is 12. We watch still watch Andy Griffith and Beverly Hillbillies because it's harmless, but it's fun. It's good stuff. And that's kind of what I wanted to do here, to target anybody. Anybody can read it. So I probably got off track there, but my granddaughter says I talk too much. Anyway,
it's a podcast. You're meant to talk. So you're doing it perfectly. I think, you know, I've had people on the podcast who might not be chatters. And it, once again, it's not an issue. It just requires some opening up different topics. But yeah, never be afraid to just share your mind. I am curious because you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of things that you said that I do want to talk about a little bit more. But you mentioned that you learned a lot as a part of this process, you know, or you were hesitant to get into writing and publishing, but you ultimately did it. And as a result, you learned lots of things that will aid you in future books. And I'm just curious to know, you know, what are some of the biggest things you did learn as a part of the process?
Well, aside from the publishing business itself, it's like anything else. I went online, I went to the library, I did all kinds of things to find out, get tips. How do you publish a book? And as I said before, I'm technologically deficient. So self-publishing, and people said, you can just self-publish it. Well, no, you can't. No, Jimmy can't do it. so I needed help. And then it's like anything else. There are so many publishing companies out there that offer certain things. And so I had to settle on one, obviously. So then again, there was the writing process. How do you write dialogue? How do you keep a story moving? What format do you use? I bought a writing program called Writeway that helps you. It's for that purpose. But I ran into a glitch in the first book because I couldn't format and convert the Writeway format to something that I could actually send somebody. So I just kind of chucked that one out the window and went to Microsoft Word, and it worked for me. So all these little nuances about dialogue and storylines, plots, character building, you can imagine all these things I've had to kind of learn along the way and get tips. I got a Facebook page that I joined on science fiction writers to get tips and things on. And I read what, I don't post much because I don't know much. So I read what they say. And I got a lot of tips that way. So it's like anything else that I've ever done. I study first. I learn as I go. It was like with music. I started playing the saxophone when I was, 15, and I couldn't play very well, which is normal, but I kept at it again because I didn't know any better, and it developed into a successful source of income for a long time. Building cars, I built a few custom cars and made mistakes along the way, but with friends who have been in the business and done it before, I was able to you know, get them done. Bikes. So it's the same way with writing. In the Army, I learned that you never say, when you're given a directive or an order, you never say, I can't. And I think that's what holds a lot of people up, because in reality, you can. You didn't say that. You didn't say, I can't do it, because the military especially is not a place where you get in a jam and you say, well, I can't do this. Buddy, you got to keep plugging. And so that's what I did, and that's what I do with everything and try to instill in the kids. So you learn all these things. You know, I wanted to learn to play the piano, but I wanted to learn to play it right now, you know, right now. And that's one thing I never learned to do. But I really had no desire. Saxophone was good enough. But there's so much to learn. We could talk all day on the things you learn, not only in publishing, but anything else. But it's valuable, all the things you pick up. And I just don't want to stop. I'm going to write another one, and it'll be more than this. This one's a 20,000 words and some change, which I thought was a lot. But turns out this is what they call a beach read. Go out on the beach for a couple hours, get some sun, read a book, finish it, go home. Or a flight from New York to Miami. You can read the book and you're done. I want to write 60 to 80,000 words in the next one so that I can build the characters, build the plot, build the, come up with some surprises, more suspense, more education on some other issues that I've read about that some people believe and some don't. So everything I've learned so far is going to go into the next one. And if it sells, that's great. If it don't, well, I'll just take a picture of it like I did the other ones you see hanging up on the wall and put it up there with them. I don't care. Because the money I spent on this book, I got to thinking, I would have built a car, would have cost more than what I got in the book. So it served the same purpose. It gave me some therapy after my wife passed away, but it's a whole lot cleaner and I didn't burn my shirt up in the process. So, but I have set my shirt on fire before.
That sounds like a story. I love the perspective, right? Because I agree. I think all authors that write their first book probably meet a lot of the same challenges. Don't know what you're doing. You have to learn the dialogue, you have to learn the description. And even then, what you learn isn't perfected, right? A lot of the experience comes from continuing writing, continuing learning and growing. But that's part of the fun. If you treat it as, well, rather than this is frustrating, I can't do it, more like, okay, this is challenging. What else can I learn to make it less challenging? That's just the right perspective to have. And that's, we homeschool our kids and we're trying to help our kids learn that, have a love of learning and have the love of curiosity so they realize you can do anything if you put your mind to it and just put a little bit of time and effort into it. And it's amazing to see how that changes their perspective. And I don't think you realize how many authors need to hear that, because we get so in our heads while we're writing, we get frustrated. But hearing someone like you say that, I was just like, he's right. That is very helpful.
You do. I've done that with everything. I was telling you about the custom paint work. When I get done with it and I look at it and give it to a customer, I think, gee whiz, I should have done something a little bit different there. Same way with music. I've done concerts and stuff, and then I look back and think I should have chosen a different song, or I should have done this different. And it's the same way with the book. But again, that's as long as you learn from it and apply it to what you're going to do next, then it is a natural response, I think. And you have to understand, too, and I'm sure you do, I believe that anything you do artistic, whether it's write a book or, create something, music, paint, whatever, a part of you goes into that. That's what happened with this book. As I said, it's a metaphor for my life, because there's joy in there. There's grief. There's tragedy. There's surprises. It's almost real life in the book. It may not end the way people want it to, but then life is not always fair. I learned that a long time ago, and it still holds true today. So there's a lot of reality. The locations in the book are all real locations, because I look back at my youth as a teenager where I grew up, which were some of the best years of my life. So I had to write about what I knew about. I'm not that smart to make up stuff. So that's why I used characters from my high school years based on them. I used events in my life to try to get the emotions and the feelings going. And the locations that are real, because I knew those locations. I can describe them to a T. It was a good time back then, before computers, before cell phones. Fun for me was getting in the boat with my dog and go crabbing in the morning. And mom would steam the crabs during the day. And when I got home from school, I had steamed crabs. And it's a good feeling to do stuff like that. That was fun. Really good stuff. And I didn't need a computer or a cell phone to get it done. Didn't have any of that. you know. So I think I'm rambling again. And
I mean,
but you'll see
again,
it in the book.
This is
you'll
perfect.
See it in the book. It's a friend of mine in Germany. I stay in touch with a lot of my friends in Germany, and a couple of them have read the book. And one told me that he has started to believe the Philadelphia experiment. Now he's researching it as a result of the book. As a matter of fact, he sent me a text the other day. 2 days after he read the book, German TV had this Philadelphia experiment movie on primetime. He was going to watch it and check it out. Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
That's very coincidental. That's very coincidental, but, you know, very cool. I think, you know, the way you described that, just your experience with writing and the perspective of writing, I think is not only beneficial for yourself in writing future books, but I think it will help, you know, anybody who's listening who might feel discouraged. And one thing I really like is, I find it ironic that you said you're not smart enough to make things up, because I have this innate fear to write things about real places, even if I've been there, because I'm afraid that I won't do it justice, if that makes sense. So it's almost easier for me
that.
to make because then I don't feel this, like, am I doing it right? Am I giving it the justice it deserves, even though I know this place, I've been there? So I commend you. I think that requires a lot of more mental ability, transparently,
what
the
I've
research.
What I've discovered along those lines, years ago, I took up oil painting. I was still in the Army, as a matter of fact, and in Germany, and I just wanted to capture some of the things that I saw. And what I discovered from that, and I've told my grandkids, that when you paint reality, scenes, landscapes, what that does is opens your eyes to those things. As you said, to do it justice, I would almost guarantee you that now, when you see something that you might want to put in a book, I'd almost be willing to bet that you stop and take it in and absorb it to get the details.
That's true. Yes.
If I had any regrets, and I've learned really not to do that, you got to keep moving forward, is that the days I spent down in Church Creek, Maryland, in Dorchester County, where this takes place, I wish I had fully appreciated every single day, to touch, to smell, to watch. Even my stepdad, who was probably the wisest man I ever met, I don't think I fully, as a teenager, appreciated him or where I was in the days that we lived in. You know, but that's, I think that's typical of most young people. And as a result, I make the best of every single day that I have, especially since losing my wife, because I know there's no promise for tomorrow. So I live an abundant life. As I'm a Christian. I've attended the same church for 30 years, which is where I met her. So I try to do that. Sometimes it costs me a lot of money. I bought two Jeeps. My son calls that what is it? Retail therapy. So we go off-roading and all that kind of stuff. So my hands are in everything. I don't want to waste a minute of any day with the people that I meet and the things that I do. And I don't think any of us should. And that's what our young people need to understand, that you can't sit in the basement in front of a video game and let that be your life. Get outside, get dirty, get your hands dirty, fall down, scratch your knee, bump your head, climb a tree, do those things that you're supposed to do as a child to build your self-confidence and everything that goes with it to become a better person. As a result, your perspective changes. I was a pastor for a while at our church when our other pastor got too old to preach. And that put a lot of things in perspective to me, because, as I said before, in the Army, you never said, I can't. You just did what you had to do, and you had to be a little tough in the process, especially when you're eating your meal under a tree with rain pouring in your food dish. You know, you suck it up and move on. I discovered as a pastor that people's problems are their problems. In other words, I might look at it as something petty from my perspective, but to them, it's the most important thing in their life that their dog can't be trained to go outside, that their son won't move out of the house, or that they spent too much money. It's important to them. And I learned that everybody out here that has problems, they're the most important things in their life. So again, I'm rambling, but, and that keeps going back to the first book I wrote, Growing Up Jimmy is called, is all those things are in there to try to help teach my grandchildren to look beyond their phones and their toys and things that they have, and get out here and touch it, meet people, do things with people, interact with people, and try things that are new. And so that's essentially what I'm doing, is trying something new. If it falls on its face, so be it. I certainly hope it don't, because I do. I told Jay at the publishing company that one of the most important things to me is that if somebody spends the $11 or $12 for this book, I hope that they enjoy it, because I know, just like everybody else does, that every penny you make is hard earned. I don't want somebody to think that they spent $11 for nothing. Mm-hmm. So that's the most important thing to me, that they get their $10 or $11 worth out of it. Even if they have to use it to prop up the coffee table, at least they can do that, you know. So I do want it to be successful in some sense. So I have to be realistic about it. So,
I mean, no, I think you brought a lot of things up that are very important, and really almost like joy in the journey type experience. It's your life to live. You have the opportunity to experience the way you make it, right? If you decide yes. to make it a depressing, sad, you know, wallowing, I can't do it experience, then it's the power is in your hands to do that versus flip it around and live life to the fullest, experience every day as if it is a joy. Like you said, I love that. And even with writing and publishing, I think that's the one thing that is tricky, is we tend as humans to associate success with, you know, being well known or being rich or being, you know, all of these things that aren't necessarily true indicators of being successful. And so that's what happens. A lot of people will publish their first book, and if it doesn't go well, or if they don't sell thousands upon thousands of copies, they feel, oh, I failed. I'm not doing it correctly. But your perspective is, but you did it and you enjoyed it. And it was an experience that you would do it again. And hopefully some people find enjoyment out of your book. I can tell you, I'm already eager to read your book just based on the way you've described it. I don't even go to the beach because I don't live near a beach, but I'll happily read a beach read.
That's what I hope. And you're right. I've taken that approach with everything, is I guess the measure of success, like you said. You know, this is a big deal for me. I won't lie to you. I'm a country guy. I just retired from the Army. I worked in a body shop. I do normal things, you know, have the same problems everybody else has. I've suffered periods of unemployment. My wife and I just kind of made things work. We live, you know, pretty much a normal life. So this is a big deal for me, you know, to actually have a book published, and doing this podcast is a big deal for me. It's a first. That doesn't escape me, that these are things that a lot of people don't do. And for a lot of people, they don't do it because they don't try. You know yourself, and I've seen it written on signs that you can buy at the gift shop, that you can't succeed if you don't fail a few times. You have to have a measure to know what it is. Your standards have to be success. So if you fall on your face, you get up, you dust yourself off, and you keep plugging. And that's, you know, I don't want to give you the impression that I just wrote this book and don't really care how it turns out, because I do. It's important. It's out of my hands now, so to speak. It's done. It's too late to change it. But the next one, I want to do better. I went through that years ago when I learned to pinstripe with a brush. In 1978, as a matter of fact, at Fort Hood, Texas, I bought a motorcycle. And I saw a picture of one similar to mine, but it had this beautiful red pinstriping on it. and I couldn't find anybody to do it. So I bought a brush and I bought some paint and I did it myself. And be honest with you, it looked like crap. But a friend of mine saw it and said, "Hey, do you do that?" And I said, "Well, cha-ching, yeah, I do that." Well, I kept at it. I kept at it and kept at it and kept at it until I got better and better and better and learned. And more than the paintwork itself are the people that I've met in the process. In the 80s, I was the only pinstriper in Western Europe, in Germany, Holland, and Belgium, and used to go to car shows. And all the people that I met from so many different countries that I could paint stuff on, and friends that I still stay in contact with. And that's what I hope to do with the book is to, some people, I want everybody to like it, but to get them talking and maybe meet some people in the process, because that's how you do it. You can't meet people sitting in your basement. You got to do something and let them know you're here so they can reach out to you. And I'm in that phase now where I'm just going to keep writing books, as long as I can, that's what the purpose it serves. And that's success. When you touch people, there's a man who said once, well, actually Jesus said it in some terms, but in plain English said that I'd rather you hate me or love me than not matter at all. And if you think about that, that's true. So if you don't like my book and you think it's crummy, tell me. If you love it, tell me. But don't just go, I don't care. I want you to notice it so I know, because that's what matters. I mean, I'm sure you can relate to that. Anybody can if you think about it. You don't want to not matter to people. If you love me, love me. If you hate me, you hate me. But at least I know I matter to you in some way, shape, or form. So that's the way it is with a book. If you don't like it, tell me. I don't care. Well, I do care. But if you don't like it, tell me why, and I'll try to fix it next time. And if you do like it, great. I'm glad you do. So we can do that with books and anything we create to touch people. That's what you want to do. Well, I want them to think. I want them to see that regular people, like the characters in the book, the regular people can actually accomplish something, and they go through the grief and the joy that the rest of us do. So we'll see what happens. See what happens with it. So,
well, to be clear, I never took it as you don't care about how.
No,
because I took it as you recognize the reality.
Care.
You do care, and I can tell, and you deeply care about the book that you've done, the work that you put into it, and I think all authors do, and I don't think anyone would ever propose just drop something and move on, but, I think having the bright, healthy perspective about people's reactions towards it is the most important thing, because at the end of the day, other people's perceptions shouldn't affect your ability to move forward and keep progressing with old and new ideas and old and new books. So
exactly. You can show them that they were wrong. But again, I saw a quote one time where, and I can't remember who quoted it, but it said that in a world of individuals, there can be no best. Because that's how we measure people. You are the best writer. You're the best painter. You're the best mechanic. Well, when it comes to creativity, I don't believe there's any best. We're just different. We're all unique. Yeah. So this is me. This book is me. Is it the best book out there? No. No, it never will be from my perspective. It'll be uniquely mine. And that's the way you look at it, because we are individuals. And as I said before, there's a lot of me in this book that I didn't realize until I actually went and reread it and realized it was a metaphor kind of for my life. Again, the joy, the grief, the tragedy, the getting mixed up, not knowing what to do, what happens. There's a lot of that in there. And I thought, gee whiz, this book was written pretty much about me, except for the Philadelphia experiment part. And so we'll see what happens with it, what people take from it. My granddaughter, the oldest, asked me about the title, and I won't go into that because there's actually two meanings to the title. once you read the book, you'll find out. But she asked me about the characters. Why did they do what they did? And I told her the same thing. They're regular people, you know, but they're faced with something that's unspeakable and unimaginable. So how do you react to that? Well, they did the best they could. And thank God I had finished chapter 9. There's 12 chapters in there. I had finished chapter 9 and realized or thought that I had written myself into a corner, because there was none of my characters I felt could overcome the antagonist in the book. He was so powerful. And I met a young lady in town, and her name stood out to me. Her name is Pepsi Flynn. And when I saw that on her business card, I asked her if I could use her name in the book. And after talking to her, meeting her, she does in fact embody the character that I had in mind from the book. And she actually saved the day. She saved my book, and she saved the situation that the characters were in. So she's as excited as I am about the success of the book and what it's doing. That's the only name in the book that's an actual real name. And I thought that was so endearing, the Pepsi Flynn. And of course, like I say, if you read the book, chapter 10, she comes in, she comes on strong, and she saves the day. So you have to see how she does that. But I thought that was pretty neat. So I met another person, another friend. We've become friends, and I thought that was pretty neat. So
that's very cool.
That's just the way it is.
I appreciate you sharing that experience. And I can tell you already right now, I'm eager to get my hands on it and read it. I definitely would love to dig into the story and let you know what I think about it. But there's so many things that we could dive into. There's a lot of ways we could take this, but we are running a little bit short on time. So I want to be sensitive to that. And before we end here, where can people find more information about your book and potentially future books that you decide to write?
Of course, from the publisher, Go To Publish would be what I'd recommend at this point. My son is helping me build a website. It'll be called Fort Perry Books, FT Perry Books. We hope to have that up and running by the end of the month. Again, because he has a job, I don't know how, so we're doing a little bit at a time. There'll be information about that book and the previous book, Growing Up Jimmy, on there. Of course, I have a Facebook page, Jim Perry, and I post stuff on there once in a while. And then, of course, the book, you can go on Barnes & Noble or Amazon and find it. And there's a little blurb about it in there, too. Maybe not enough to let you know, but we're working as fast as we can for novices to reach out. I had no, you know, I hope to do some book signings this summer. And the website will be the big deal. Unfortunately, jimperry.com, somebody already had it.
Someone already took it.
So I came up with Fort Perry. That my property, as a throwback to my Army days, my property is known as Fort Perry. And so I just said, how about Fort Perry Books, FT Perry Books. So hopefully by the end of April, you'll be able to check that out. I'll post that on my social media and get it out there. And there will be updated information as we go along about that. A little bit about me and whatever else I can come up with to make it interesting. So that's where we are with that. But I would say for now, Go To Publish can help you right now. I don't know if I should. Can I give my email address if anybody wanted to know? Is that something you do, or that's not?
Yeah, if you'd like to, you're welcome to. If you want people emailing you, I will definitely not say no.
Well, I'll try it. I don't. I'm at J.H. Perry, J-H-P-E-R-R-Y 52 at gmail.com.
Perfect.
And if I have to stay up all night, I'll answer every email. I don't care. I don't have a life other than my red time writing a book. So
your time,
I will answer. So.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate that. That's awesome. Thank you so much for your time today. This has been an excellent conversation.
Well, thank you. I was the only thing I was worried about was Toby down here barking and getting us,
he's
but
quiet.
He's been in his best behavior. So I thank God for that. But I enjoyed this too. I really did. And I appreciate you taking the time to do it. So if you do read the book, I want you to, hopefully you'll enjoy it. And keeping in mind that I'm new to this and I did the best I could. So the next one will be bigger, better, and it'll finish the story as a sequel. So that's what you'll have.
Very cool. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much.
All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
I hope you found that helpful and interesting. Talking to Jim was, like I mentioned, it was just a very positive and enlightening experience. He's such a positive person. And looking at someone or hearing from someone who is at a different end of life as you is just really heartening, I would say, because there's so much to look forward to. His writing career has just begun, but he has many more years ahead of him, and he's hoping to get more books out. So take a chance now and get it out there. Next week, I will actually be talking to my brother, Chris Kenner. So my brother, Chris, has been working on a book for, I want to say, nearly 20 years, if not more. He mentions the timeline as a part of the interview. But we'll be talking about never giving up on a story. We're talking about his experience of writing, why it's taken him so long, what has changed recently to get him into writing again, and, you know, why never giving up on a story is an important part of being an author. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't, you know, you write something and you never ignore it. You eventually use it. It just means never give up on something that might still have potential because of discouragement or life circumstances or anything. So it's a very great conversation. It's also fun to have my first family member on the podcast. Definitely a new experience for the both of us, but we have a grand old time. I think you're going to enjoy that conversation. So tune in next week. Of course, if you'd like to join me on the podcast, just head to thecasualauthor.com, fill out the pitch form there. I'd love to hear from you. If you have any relation to anything publishing, would love to chat with you. Also, you can email me at dan@thecasualauthor.com if you have any feedback or questions or thoughts. I will be happy to respond to you. So thanks again for listening today, and I look forward to talking to you next week.